This is the intersection of assistive, educational, and information technology. Whether it's technology for inclusive classroom learning or tools for community success, technology can promote independence, and inclusive technology has become more available for everyone. Welcome to the Inclusive Technology for All podcast with your host, Mike Murata.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Inclusive Technology for All, episode 77. We will continue on our journey through the weekly assistive technology town halls with a recording from this past week's town hall, which happened on May 18th, 2020. Hope you enjoy. And if you're interested in joining us for one of the future events, we'll keep them going for a few weeks before school stops for the summer. You can visit the website AT4NJ, that's the number 4, AT4NJ.org, and sign up under the community of practice link. So hope to see you there soon. Thanks. Have a good one.
Okay, there we go. Recording. Hi, everybody. Now Karen can say who's here, and we can all stare at each other.
Well, we've got Rachel, Bruce, Beth, we've got Alyssa, Lauren, Mallory. Yeah, that's all who I can see.
I see other people in the participant box. Christine is here, and Naomi's here.
And Mike, where's your picture? Where are you?
I don't know. I see me.
No, I'm not seeing Mike. I'm looking where I can see all the
good
participants.
I don't need to be seen. Wait till you see me. It's going to be a huge disappointment.
Yeah, I can't see Mike either.
This is the only Zoom meeting I'm in. Be impressed that I even put mascara on for you all.
Oh, boy. Here we are, May 18th. Here we are. I don't have any planned questions for today, so this really is about as loose as it's going to be for just conversation. I have our standard kind of pre-slide slides that tells us who's here and participate in the chat and use the shared Google Doc, which is bit.ly/remote-access-for-all. Don't forget about the AT Chat website, atchat.info. I'm just burning through all these slides so we can sit and chat. You still have time. If you're listening to this today or you watched the recording before Wednesday, Wednesday is the virtual AT Expo happening for New Hampshire. A handful of people on this call now are going to be presenting. We have like over 400 people signed up. There's over 40 different sessions, national presenters, local presenters, vendor sessions. It's going to be pretty great. And you can sign up for the free registration at bit.ly/ATExpo520. And that's
Mike, it's really great what you were able to pull together for that, and that it is free professional development. That's awesome.
Yeah, and we'll see how people like those little chunks of 25-minute sessions. I don't know how that
super
can
go. Excited as a presenter. I'm like, all right, 25, sometimes it's hard because you're used to doing an hour or whatever, but 25, you just got to pick out what's the most important things you want to say. I love it.
Yeah, I kind of like it too. I think it's interesting. It does. It forces you as a presenter. I know I'm notorious for this. I present like it's comparable to a bucket of water. I will fill whatever space you give me. It doesn't matter. But I like the idea of shorter and just kind of boiling it down. I agree, Beth. I think it's cool. Yeah. So I feel like people could carve out 25 minutes of their day to go to something where they maybe can't carve out an hour.
I also feel like there is the reality of Zoom fatigue, and I love the idea that 25 minutes might be what somebody has the visual attention span for, or you know, an hour is a lot sometimes.
Yeah. An hour is a lot. Yeah, it's about bandwidth, right? I only got so much I can give for any given thing. And so that hopefully will feel pretty good. And as you can see, this might be the last week that the little grid is on the wall, because if the event's Wednesday, I might take it down. Or I might leave it up because I like looking at it. It's kind of fun.
Why can't I see you?
I don't know.
I see you now, Mike. I don't know what happened.
I see you now. I just had to scroll up.
Tiffany asked, will the presentations be archived? They will. We're going to ask all the speakers to record themselves, and then we will connect the links to the recordings to the online schedule. So each of the sessions here, I'll pop over for a second, free plug. Each of the sessions has, here's the online schedule. And so you'll be able to see who's presenting what. And then each session will have its own crowdsource notes page. And then we'll also drop a link in there for the recordings when we're done. So everything will live on that same document.
I need to make sure I'm recording mine then.
Yes, I just sent all the presenters a reminder today.
Yeah.
Like, hey, make sure you record.
Yeah, definitely.
I sent you mine's, I'm gonna do games.
Okay.
Use your post-it notes to your advantage, Beth. This is what's on the bottom of my monitor for almost every session I do. It says start record.
Let me see.
You know, you can set your Zoom to have it automatically record.
You can.
So I'll put that
yeah.
on there.
I have the same thing. I told you guys that I can't pull it off because the post-its are stuck so nice, but right on the front of my computer in front of my microphone is a post-it note on the right that says record and close caption, and on the left it gives me the keyboard commands for Zoom so I can get in and out of the audio and the video.
The sticky notes on my desk right now are a little out of control.
Well, those are just the ones on my monitor. We won't talk about the desk part.
Yeah, no, I hear you. There you go, Mallory. Mallory asked for the link again. There you go.
Oh, Beth, that's lovely. I could cover my entire body probably in the post-it notes that are on my desk. Many of them are in a like two finished piles. That's kind of nice to see the stack of the finished pile, but I really should just throw them out because they're put
away. No. When mine are finished, they are crumpled up in a ball and thrown in. That is the point of a post-it note, is that I can physically crunch it up.
See, I've got the pile of the finished that if I tried to put them in my trash can, I'd probably just make a mess because it's on the other side of the room.
Yeah, I've never made my way to a finished pile of post-it notes because I want to destroy them every time I finish one.
Right.
And since we're speaking about executive function supports for us right now, I've gone to index cards because they were from the dollar store and my daughter got me a whole pack of them. And so now, since I'm not going anywhere, they're just all on index cards sitting on my desk now. And then every card has...
My brother works for 3M, so...
Oh, so you have
I
to
do
have
that. I have a source.
Yeah, I have no source. My source is called Dollar Tree. And when you get 200 for a dollar, that sounds like a pretty good source.
It's all right. It took me like 3 years of them being, my kids being in college for me to make the connection that 3M also makes all of the command strips.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have been giving me that all this time.
Command strips, way to go. I like it.
Yeah, Tiffany says she's been using Trello. I use Trello for another project, and I like it. I just haven't jumped quickly into it. Like, if I'm doing curated things to re-show up on, I dump them in Wakelet, and I just haven't jumped to Trello for that. I just feel like it's another tool, and I just can't. Talk about bandwidth. I just can't add another tool in the mix when I already have Bigfoot doing that for me.
I've been trying
to use Notability, and I just I went back to my old ways.
Yeah. I have Trello.
I live on my Notability, but my Trello has become my visual board because then no matter what device I have in my hand when someone asks me a question, I can go and steal it and send it to them.
I like the Trello chunks it too. The need to do, already done, and something else. Well, I can't think of the columns, but it puts.
Well, and I even have one that's just, I have it broken down to where I have one that's just my AT, different links and everything. And I was listening this morning to last week's thing, and everyone was talking about trying to do online executive function. And you guys started having a conversation about formatting their files and everything. Landmark had a post in end of April about how they use their terminology to coordinate all of their files so that the kids know exactly where it is and everything. And if that was a great blog, and I have it as one of my AT things that I share now.
Oh, that's interesting.
Will you drop it in the chat?
Yeah.
I will go to my Trello and drop it in.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Yeah, that was good. Karen beat me to it because that sounds interesting. Yeah, that idea of naming conventions and how we go about keeping somebody organized.
I'm trying to get better. I'm very horrible at it.
I'm also horrible at it. So that's why I take any resource I can.
And I've used Asana a little bit, A-S-A-N-A. It's very similar to Trello in that picture of, like, when I have a major work project, I'll use it to do that. In progress still needs to have approval, or, you know, all the little pieces I can chunk out, which is nice because it's harder to do that with Post-it notes.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder to move them around. I don't have a big board like Mike does that I could make, you know, my project board. So I have used Asana for that too. I haven't used it during any of this distance learning time. I'm not sure why, but.
You have a big project board. Alyssa, I'm seeing it right behind you. Just pull some of that stuff off the wall.
And make a big project. Well, my nephew would be very, very sad if I pulled his painting off the wall.
I think you go.
He actually.
Go how I did, put it behind your door so that when the door is open, you kind of cover most of it.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Yes, he actually asked, he saw me on, I actually did a practice teletherapy session with him when I was building my tutorials, and he asked why his picture didn't have more screen time because it was on this wall over here. So the aunt had to make some adjustments to the layout of the office so that the nephew was happy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Got no problem with that.
Yeah.
So what else is up with everybody? Anybody have something they want to chat about?
I just had a thought. I mean, I think we're at a point now where some school districts are actually like in their last week or so of school. And then I know where I am in Maryland, there's a whole nother month. And then there's all these questions about summer. So what are people hearing as they're going into the end of the school year and summer and thoughts for next year?
This is first week of summer here in Oklahoma. Wow. And some schools have gone ahead and started ESY this week and will be done with ESY before middle of June, and we're not starting until August. Some schools are going ahead and waiting to start ESY in June. But some of them, they'll be done by, I have one district that I work with, and they'll be done by June 10th with even their ESY.
So how do they justify, like, because isn't that then, like, the whole point of ESY is to stop regression? I don't know, that's a little strange. Because there'll be still a big gap.
Our state's been coming out with stuff for next year, and they're asking them to come up with, like, four different calendars for next year, which is crazy. And the one thing that bothers me is that in the documentation, it says, are districts required to provide technology? And the answer was no.
Wow.
Especially for you, Tiffany, because you're in such a internet desert. I mean, from our conversations we've had in the past.
I just don't know how you provide such equal access by sending a paper packet home.
Yeah. Well, you don't. Yeah. Wow.
We still have four more weeks of our regular school year. Never mind.
Yeah, we do too.
Extended ESY.
Yeah. We actually have more than four, I think. It might be five or six.
Some districts, it's even the second week of summer. Some districts last week was their first week of summer.
Wow.
When did you start?
We start, school starts, ooh, I got a plane going over me. School starts the middle of August for the most of our districts.
Okay.
So around the 15th to the 20th, sometime in there. And then we go until, you know, we normally go until the Thursday or Friday before the holiday in May. So it's still.
We started about the same time, but we finished, our last day of school hasn't changed. It's the Friday of Memorial Day week. So we are off Monday. We go Tuesday through Friday, and then we finish Friday, have like 2 days of post planning, and then jump into ESY.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and we had this all hit during our spring break. Then we had 2 weeks off before we even started distance learning. So our kids had 3 weeks of no learning. Back on for four, maybe five, depending on the district, and then we're back to nothing.
So what are you hearing and from family?
No new learning during this time. Wow. It was only review time.
What are you hearing? What are people hearing from families in terms of what they want for the summer? Like, and I don't know, maybe some places are going to be, I mean, we're not going to be face to face, I'm sure.
We're seeing way less parents from the related services side wanting teletherapy based speech OTPT. We found even last week, a lot of our parents were like, can we just be done? Like they've just been juggling too much. And we went pretty much, they probably had 2 weeks break of services in terms of OTPT speech. So I kind of put that in our therapists and our parents' hands and said, you guys figure out what works for you guys.
Yeah.
And then we have a lot less kids whose parents want even summer school services to begin with, because they're going to be virtual and because it's very likely going to be a different teacher virtually. And that's a lot of shift for our kids. And so I have a feeling our numbers are just going to be down over across the board, both kids wanting curriculum supports and then kids wanting therapy.
Yeah, we're definitely in the same boat. This is my last week of school is this week, and my daughter ended last week in one of the districts. They're all different, and they go back at the end of July and beginning of August. But we have lots of parents that are just like, I can't juggle this, and I'm so done. And it's not even what's best, it's how we can survive at this point. So we're being really respectful of that, but it worries me, you know?
Yeah. It's such a worry.
Our buildings can technically be opened as of June 1st.
Will they be?
Tiffany? Some districts are in conversation about doing it.
Wow.
I can't see it happening where we are certainly not on a full, I mean, if somebody wants to hire me as a consultant to figure it out, I'm happy to do it. I have some thoughts around what it might look like, but I don't think it's going to look like it looked.
Well, we're having a hard time because we have a small therapy and we've only got, less than 10 therapists in our building. We're having a hard time getting supplies for our office with just our 10.
Right.
With our therapist going to be wearing face shields because it's hard to do speech therapy and reading therapy with not being able to see our mouth. So, and we're starting off with just bringing our youngest ones in first and keeping our old ones on virtual because we don't see a way of being able to do it effectively.
Yeah. Scary stuff. Bruce, did I hear you jump in?
That's such an amazing point to think of providing face-to-face instruction with a face mask on. Because you really do need to see, especially around speech therapy, I would think around any type of therapy, you really need to see facial expressions. I mean, that's part of learning too, is nonverbal communication that comes through and facial expressions. And what do we do with the kids who are deaf and hard of hearing? So I've seen a lot of the face shields and the masks that have the clear cover, but is that the expectation that everyone has to wear a face mask starting in the fall?
Yeah. And the other thing, hi everyone. It's Cheryl. I just came from a run. I don't normally look like this.
Wait a second. Now I got to find you. Oh, there she is.
Well, my nose is all red. I've been outside running, so my face is all deep red. But the other issue, my son doesn't mind wearing a face mask, but a lot of his friends, we did a birthday parade, car parade, and a lot of his friends, just sensory-wise, cannot wear the mask, get very upset with wearing it. So as much as I would love for summer session to happen for my son, I was like, you can't wear a mask for 4 hours. There's just no way you can do that. Right. So from a sensory perspective, that's really hard for some of these kiddos. So,
yeah, for sure. That's such a good point.
It's really hard, too, for families who just maybe know their kid and know those things and things might be open, but then they've chosen, maybe they don't feel safe or their circles of exposure because they're healthcare workers or whatever, essential workers, they don't want to expose their kids. And what about the family's choice? I think that's really challenging. If schools are all open and then the absentee policy stays the same, but some families choose to not send their kids, you know, are they forced then to do homeschooling? Do we still have to do instruction during this time for those students? Right. You know, what does that look like? You know, how about, they can't just unenroll them, you know, but they can after a certain amount of days if you don't go to physical school under our current absentee policies. So I don't know, I think there's a lot of implications for that, and some more leniency about that during this time is going to be needed.
Some educators have wanted to disrupt education anyway. Mm-hmm. Some of the more innovative educators, this virus is totally disrupting education, and public education, I think, is going to look very different as a result.
It could look better. Well, yeah,
be better.
Yeah, unless people slide right back in and they give a kind of, whew, glad that's over, and they just go right back to doing what they were doing.
Yeah, it's like that question you asked a couple weeks ago, like, how are we going to make it stick?
Yeah.
You know, all the, like, we've been on our soapbox for many, many years about accessibility and universal design for learning, and, you know, we're finally getting some traction and leverage with that, but then, like, how do we make it stick once we go back so people don't slide backwards? I don't know. I don't have the right answer. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't have the answer.
Hopefully, drink the Kool-Aid. Like, the motivation and, like, seeing the students who were non-responders, you know, are responding, or we're getting more out of those students, or they're just seeing the benefits, but I don't really know.
I think there's so many kids and families, though, that they're not even, that we're not reaching for a whole bunch of reasons. I agree, this has been very disruptive. I mean, I think it is disrupting education in positive and negative ways. I hope we learn from it. I can't see how, certainly, districts in large urban areas are going to be able to go back to business as usual. It might happen in rural areas to some degree. I don't have words actually for it. I think it's going to be very interesting. I think there's a lot of different things, and I think we're going to be looking at a minimum of some sort of hybrid model of education for some time to come. And this has really forced people to look at all of the inequity out there, and whether it is inequity due to access as far as access for individuals with disabilities, whether it's inequity due to access because of socioeconomic, or whether it's due to inequities due to access because of lack of internet infrastructure, you know, regardless of socioeconomics.
Yeah, I think it's
definitely
interesting.
Ended our conversation in our district about equity, because before, equity was not including accessibility and all that. And so I'm like, you know, we need accessibility from, like, when we look at how our leaders are structured in our department or in our division, you know, we have leaders in, you know, teaching and learning, we have in technology, we have in HR, so we have these assistant superintendents in each area. And then now we have a new chief executive officer in equity and excellence. And I'm like, well, but who's checking, like, that things are accessible for the employees and for the families and for the students and all these different things? So I think there's gonna be more conversation around that, and also, people have known a little bit, so I think some of the pressure to do the right thing that they've maybe known about for a long time is greater, which can be a good thing in our case, because we have needed to make some changes. So,
yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think it's interesting what Tiffany said about schools preparing four different versions of what school looks like. Which gives you a sense of how unsure people are. And to go to Karen's point, I think some of those, I would imagine a district coming up with four different plans of what school looks like, some of those will be disruptive to the norm, but I got to feel like one of them is going to be the norm. It's going to be back to day one of school. But I'm curious what those others look like, and who's helping to kind of frame that conversation, to do those things that Lauren mentioned, like making sure. accessibility is high up there, access to technology and all those other pieces. It's really interesting.
Yeah, so one of our public school options already is called Alachua eSchool. It's basically virtual school. We provide through three different vendors. Like, we have courses we teach in-house. We have a couple that we contract out. We are anticipating the enrollment in eSchool to balloon, mm-hmm. so that it is all already online. It's already set up. It is fairly accessible based on some of the platforms. I mean, I have a kid who took courses, who's an iGaze user, who took her courses in eSchool and did well with them. But a lot of them are very video based, and I expect that our numbers across the board are going to rise, whether that's a kid who has an IEP or not, that eSchool, both elementary and high school, secondary, is gonna be probably a route that a bunch of parents choose, because the curriculum is a little more structured and set up for online learning, obviously, because it's an online platform, versus the let's take an in-classroom curriculum and make it virtual. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. And Bruce had two really good comments that I've already seen happen. The idea that there's going to be a lot less money available, and then they're going to be programs are going to be fighting for the available funds. I mean, I know personally, I've already had. I don't think Jen's on the call. Jen Savage and I had is the key word. Had a contract with the state of Massachusetts to do a PD event for the whole year, and we got a letter a few weeks ago saying they were gonna cancel that contract because they needed that money for something else. And I think we're gonna see that a lot. I think that's gonna be something that we're gonna deal with. Bruce also said, "I expect a weakening of FAPE, especially for students where you can't maintain physical distancing in schools." Yeah, I think it's really gonna be interesting how this moves forward. Good points, Bruce.
We're going to have to really be on our toes and find effective ways to advocate for the kids that need services and creative solutions that don't involve additional funds,
yeah.
additional equipment. I mean, we've all done that to some extent, but it's no longer going to be, you can go to a SPED director and say, well, we need a larger iPad for the student with vision issues, because the money's just not going to be there. We're going to have to find other ways to do things.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And you're right. It is kind of isn't it the irony of it? We've opened people's eyes to assistive tech and how important it is and how valuable it is. And yet there still might not be money to even get that stuff as we think is necessary. And we're still going to have to be creative, figure out unique solutions for someone without having to spend a lot of money.
And I think one of the ways that we're going to drive forward the conversation is that we've never been a one-to-one district. We have had these little pockets of one-to-one, either schools or classrooms or grade levels. And I think this is going to push that conversation for our district into a readiness of, we need to at least be ready and available to be a one-to-one district, even if they're not going to say, okay, we're going to use that during the school system year, which that would be crazy not to, just to have them sit there. But we don't have, I mean, we had to order a ton of devices, even just to have them provisioned. We took them back from other places. So I think, I'm hoping in our area that kind of forces the conversation forward a little bit.
Yeah.
About just the availability of devices. And there's a lot, you guys know this, there's a lot we can do if the kid has a device. I can meet the kids, a lot of kids' needs with the Chrome extension, with a this, with a that. But if I don't have a physical device for them, that's a barrier for me, for that kid, which I'm hoping that this will help alleviate a little bit, even if there's not this other pocket of funding for other things, even just having that universally designed technology access, I think will help. I hope it's gonna push the conversation, especially from the equity perspective of yes, we have school A, B, and C where the kids' parents all could afford to have a computer at home for them to use, but that's not the case with half the other schools. So
right. I don't know.
Force to some of the vendors to make either more powerful tools, because you can't have multiple subscriptions. Mm-hmm. I think people will look at cleaning up kind of where there's overlap, or things that do the same as another subscription does, because there's just not going to be a lot of money and they're going to be looking for efficiencies. So either vendors are going to make more powerful tools and acquire some of these smaller companies, I think, like we've seen that with Microsoft and, like, you know, buying up other, and Google buying up and Amazon buying up, like all these other smaller companies and making that. And then they're just becoming these powerhouses. But then you can just, you pick one, but it's like, then you're in that lane and you got to be in that lane, which is hard.
Yeah.
So I try really hard not to wear my lesson picks hat in something like this, but I, from that
it's almost literally right over your head.
I know, it really is. Yeah.
Literally a hat.
All right, like here, how's that? Okay, now you can't see it.
Sorry.
Okay, but I think it's also how vendors are adapting in the moment. And I know we as a company have worked really hard to be responsive. And I think in part we were able to do that because it was a small company. It is a small company, and so there's not a lot of red tape to go through.
Right.
But I agree, Laura, and I think that people are going to see what they need and what's worth spending money on and what is effective and what bells and whistles are important and what bells and whistles aren't.
And it might not be us too, like being part of a school division where they have to make decisions kind of like for so many different groups. We might say like, oh, this is really needed, but then it like becomes special ed again. And it's not like UDL, or, you know, it's not like they're like, oh, you need read and write. Like, we're not going to buy it for everybody. We'll just like buy it for, you know, I'm worried that might happen. I don't think it will. I think that they'll try to look at what's powerful and say, we need to use this for everybody. And I think we do have some people who are more progressive thinkers, like in our school division, that will say, all right, we got to put our training and time and effort. And, you know, if we're going to buy this resource, then we have to maximize the use of it. And we picked a good one for a good reason, multiple platforms, you know, universally designed, good accessibility, whatever those factors are. And they'll start training more. So there might be some more, I don't know, other good that will come out of it, because we have resources like that people aren't maximizing the use of. I don't know if anybody else has that. Maybe we're just lucky. And I think we are lucky.
Very,
I mean, I'm
in your area. It's very interesting to look at the data.
Yeah.
With some of these tools that provide data, and you have to, like, coming from school administration, you have to look, like, so if you're using Read and Write or Snap and Read or any of these tools that provide, you know, unique, whatever, any of these ones that have data on usage, and to see, well, what was used and why wasn't it being used, or why was it being used, or
what I found is that, or at least my hope is that what'll drive the district keeping certain tools is the demand from the teachers. Mm-hmm. Previously, I've been the one pushing across all my districts. I've been the one pushing certain tools, and then they get adapted and they get used. But I have teachers now creating screencasts for the first time in their lives, using Edpuzzles for the very first time, stuff that I've talked about using Flipgrid. And my hope is that when the administration starts making decisions about what tools they're going to keep, there'll be teachers who say, this has been really valuable with my class. Here's the data I have, especially on the ones that you can integrate with, say, Google Classroom. So that's been, I think, like all of you, I'm always trying to pull something positive out of this really horrible situation. And that has, watching teachers who have no technical ability and who are very insecure about it do something for the first time and see that it's successful using tech, that's the part that I hope we keep. And I hope they're the ones that drive the district maintaining certain tools, because we can't keep all of them. And even though the companies have given us a lot of stuff for free, only some of them are going to continue when the subscription requirements come back on.
Yeah, right. It's not sustainable for a vendor to just give something free ad.
No, definitely not.
You know, in infinity. Can't.
But like anything else, and it goes to Bruce's comment and what Lauren said before, if we're bringing educators along with this process and reminding them about the features of things and what features are you finding helpful, that makes tools more valuable, because you're finding that they are feature rich, that are helping you meet the needs of your students. And it's the stuff we talk about all the time. And here it comes again, this idea of feature matching and taking the student's skills and abilities and matching it to the features of tools. And maybe some of these tools that we are getting for free now will be valuable enough to pay for come September. Others may not. And I agree with Bruce 100%. I mean, watching people who previously were terrified of doing technology things suddenly flourishing in certain aspects of it is exciting. And I do think that will stick. I had someone just tell me this morning, I was sitting in their webinar as tech support just to make sure it didn't fall apart, and I was doing other work. And one of the people in the meeting said, "We're almost at a point where we don't need you anymore." And I was like, "Well, that's great. Good. I'll go back and I'll do the other work that I was doing." So I think people are starting to build some capacity and some comfort to do these things, even if it is just running a Zoom meeting by showing a slide and having the captions work. I mean, those are all wins right there, that some people that we work with just weren't at that spot before. And so I think those are good
things. That is awesome to hear that they said that they might not need you, because that's what we are always trying to do, work ourselves out of a job.
I thought of you, Karen, when she said that. I was like, oh, that's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. Because she saw that I was working on the side. And she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm doing work. You guys are handling things. You don't need me. I'm happy to be here, but I'm going to work over here." And that's when she dropped the bomb that she doesn't need me. I was like, "Great, good."
How did you get there? You had to do some instructional coaching and some coaching model, right?
It is. It was just coaching over time. It's interesting because the role. This is for my job at the AT Act, but my AT Act is housed in a nonprofit, a disability nonprofit. And so my department was the only one that was really doing a lot of these virtual things anyway. So when this whole work at home thing started, there was very little ramping up for us. We just kept doing what we were doing, but the rest of our agency was trying to catch up. And so myself and Naomi, I think Naomi is still here down the bottom. Yep. Naomi and I in our department became the de facto tech support for everybody. So one of us is on every webinar, every practice, every meeting, just to make sure the Zoom works and no one doesn't fall apart. And now they're getting to a point where they're pretty self-sufficient in certain things. And it was over time, just pointing out to them things that were working, things they should be looking for as we went through all these meetings. And it's been really positive. I like being worked out of that job. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Because we all know, Karen, right? There's still plenty of work to do.
Yes, and yep, there sure is.
Can I respond to a couple of things in the chat? It wasn't addressed to me, but is there a pattern what types of tools teachers are using successfully? I remember with great embarrassment when I first started doing AT and I would do a presentation on 80 different apps. Thankfully those, yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
We've all been there, Bruce. It's okay.
What I look for, and in fact, I see that now in other people that are coming into the field. So I guess maybe that whole thing. Now what I look for is the bare minimum that I can discuss, including apps that people are already familiar with. So when I taught screencasting, I didn't use a separate tool. I showed them how to do it with Zoom. Mm-hmm. They already know how to use Zoom. Right. And it'll do, you can't edit with it, et cetera. But you can make very easily make a screencast, and we'll look at other tools later. But I have really lowered the number of items that I recommend, and they have to be really powerful, and they typically have to integrate with each other to make it worthwhile. One of the library specialists here just did a slide deck, and I looked through it, and it was great that he's doing it, but there were about 30 tools in it. And it's like one of them's a whiteboard tool. And I'm thinking, well, but there's a whiteboard in Zoom. And one of them, like, well, yeah, but Read and Write has this already, so you don't need to duplicate it. I've been in both of my districts for a long time, and I've worked with so many of the people there. There's a certain level of trust. So some of them were willing to try things even before this happened. And then the best way is to get one teacher interested, and then they tell the rest of their colleagues. And yeah, that's pretty much how I've operated. I've done a lot of PD as well, but most of it's been geared at the assistants because they're the ones that are using it directly with students. But they often influence the teachers and then it comes around that way. But boy, fewer tools, the better.
I agree. I to this day, it's one of my favorite ed camp experiences because I almost got thrown out of an ed camp and it was just, it made me smile. Because it was one of those sessions where the title of the session was, it was like 60 tools in 30 minutes or something like that. And yeah, and this person just bulldozed through 60 things. And you could almost see people's heads just kind of swiveling, like, what is happening to me? And at the end, I had raised my hand. I don't know why I raised my hand. I was in an ed camp. I should have just said something. But I raised my hand, probably for effect. And I said, how will one of you use any of these tools? That's the conversation we should be having. It's not just knowing 60 tools. It's knowing, as Bruce says, one tool that maybe you can use 60 different ways. Great, I'm all for that. That's perfect.
Yeah.
People don't have bandwidth for that. And I know, and I think Lauren put it in the chat box, Bruce, she called you a wise one, and I like that. Yes, Bruce, a wise one. The difference between knowledge and wisdom. Yeah, right? Knowing 80 apps does not impress. Knowing how to use one app really well and to solve a lot of different problems, or a handful, that impresses. That's good.
Absolutely. I think that was one of my biggest things at the beginning of the culmination of all of this. You know, like, we have so much knowledge and people are like tapping in. And I was like crying at the end of every single day because I was trying to create resources and rob and beg and borrow and steal. And then all of a sudden I had this epiphany and I was like, I'm not doing that anymore, right? Yeah. So I started having my office hour meetings and I said, I'm creating a Google site that has all of the different breakdown sections for you. And every time you need something, I'm adding to it, but yeah, I'm not creating this right now, crying anymore.
No, no, that's right.
Or crying.
No crying. I can cry for other things. I only want to cry for this.
I cry all the time, but not for that.
I felt much the same way, Rachel. At the beginning, I was like finding so many things. And then I realized that what mattered was a teacher finding a resource they clicked with.
Yeah.
And once they clicked with it, they're like blowing me away with the things they're creating.
Right.
So I agree with this. Get really good at using one tool,
yeah,
but like know that there are a range of tools out there and then be able to choose.
Right, because think about how many of us don't even use a fraction of the features of the tools that we have. I mean, it's all day long you see this. Some of my favorite comments are from like staff members who say, oh, I wish my phone had a calendar app in it. Well, your phone has a calendar app in it. It came with it. No, I don't think so. No, I'm pretty sure it does. So even a flip phone comes with a calendar, so they're all in there. So knowing what you have and trying to figure that out is so tricky, but it's so important, so valuable, that those are the things that will stick.
And I think it will also make for like a calmer environment when, yeah, you're just saying like, focus on one thing. It's not like the frenzy of, I gotta learn 100 things and everybody's so much faster than me. And I don't know, I think I work with a whole bunch of type A teachers and SLPs and, you know, that are kind of just doing like, I gotta know everything. I'm like, you don't.
Just, yeah, you know,
go slow,
yeah,
make it meaningful, and people are chilling out now.
Yes, exactly. And it's that same kind of panic that people see when they go on Twitter sometimes and they like, oh, my classroom doesn't run like that, oh, I must be a horrible teacher. And you just can't do that to yourself, and you just can't. You find the spots that work and you have your successes and go forward. You know,
yeah. And I think as soon as we got them to see, like, A, take a breath,
yep,
but B, like, let's talk about all the tools you already know, not just the ones you have access to, but what do you already know how to use really well? And yes, we could add a new tool here and there to solve problems, which we have, but being able to kind of package what they could use in ways that they were already familiar with, you know, it's that activating the background knowledge kind of piece of learning for them.
Yeah.
The same thing applied to my therapist. I kind of had to go, okay, guys, like, this is not, we're just shifting the modality that we're using. Like, we're not shifting what you already know. Like, let's go back. Let's find what you already know. What do you do for this activity? Great. Let's do it in a different way. So I think it just, they needed that time and I needed that time to help them shift from, yeah, we have a bunch of resources and they're great. And yes, you can have this, this, or this for free, but what do you already have? And I think that has helped tremendously for people to just feel like they can exhale.
Yeah, I use the same methodology I look at when I look at the built-in accessibility features. You use those until you can't use them anymore. Right? They're perfect until they're not. They have a limited feature set and they're great if that's all you need. But if you need one more thing, what's that one more thing you need? And then you go look for something that has that one more thing. But if you don't need anything beyond that, if I open my phone up and I do speak selection and that works for me with the highlighting and the control of the voice, well then great. Your problem solved. Let's move on to another one. So this idea of, you know, collecting 15 different text-to-speech apps is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary.
That's a kind of culture too. I think we're like, we have a lot of families and they say like, well, what other technologies are out there that we might be using? I'm like, well, is there a problem?
Exactly. That's the right question, right?
I don't see the need for anything. They said, like, tell me a list of everything that's available. I said, it doesn't matter what's available.
Doesn't matter.
What is it you need to be able to do? That's what I always say. Well, what do you want your students to be able to do? Or what do you want your child to be able to do? That drives the conversation.
Exactly.
But I do have a question. Did anyone learn anything new in the past week or a new feature or a new anything that you like would love to share with the rest of us? I have to say I'm constantly learning new things, so I'd love to hear from anybody that learned something new that was like super aha moment.
I had a tiny one this morning. I was in a meeting. We use Microsoft Team Meets, and so we were in Teams and there was a cued language transliterator that was on for one of our staff members, and now we can have 9 pictures or whatever in or 9 video screens in our Brady Bunch. And so what was happening was more people were sharing their videos and he kept bumping off. And so there's a way that you can pin him in Teams. So you can pin it so you can stick that video so that video doesn't go away. So that was really important. And actually it was the person who needed it that figured it out. And she shared it with everybody else because she said, oh, no, I can still see him because I pinned it. So just know that in Teams you can pin somebody's video, like if you have a translator or interpreter, that you can do that.
And you can do that in Zoom also. You can make them the spotlight video and then they're always there too. Yeah, that's awesome. Good. Cool. Anybody else share something you learned? I almost can't even remember last week. Isn't that horrible? Like I was sitting here,
something you learned this morning then, Mike.
I don't even know.
So one of the things I was really excited to learn, although it's really useless information, but was to learn how to make these Bitmoji scenes in Google Slides. And using the transparent feature, I never knew about those. So that was really fun. Well,
that's fun.
What did you use it to make?
Thank you. That's the right question there.
I'm going to use it. It's going to take me some time, but I'm just going to play with it as part of a couple of webinars I have to do this week. So Sarah, you doing that too already? I see. Yes, Sarah, so fun. Yeah. Is anybody already? Yeah, virtual.
Kelly, office. Isn't that how you made the thing that went up for AT Chat?
It is, yeah. But then I just saw on Twitter that I recently tweeted out, I made the slide where your Bitmoji is like animated. So they're like moving around and you can take out the backdrop of in Snapchat. Oh my gosh. I wish I would have known this when I made that Twitter chat camp for us, because we all could have been really dancing.
Yes. I saw that video today, just now, like an hour ago too, Kelly. Was it by Tom McElmore or something? I think that's his name.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Put it in the chat. Can you put the link in the chat, Kelly?
Yes, I'll get it right now.
Yeah, because that feels like something I could spend my afternoon working on. That feels valuable somehow.
Time suck, but it looks
IEP meeting Bitmoji.
Why do you have to pick? Why can't I do both? I have two computers.
Rachel, I like it. You're on mute, though.
That's actually Kelly, but we have very similar Bitmojis.
Only thing, Kelly, tell me about this, because in the Bitmoji scene, when you make the virtual scenes in Google Slides, they tell you to download the Bitmoji Chrome extension. And when I go to do that, there are so many things that you're giving it permission to that I'm really reluctant to add the Bitmoji Chrome extension. Did anybody else do that too? I mean, look at it, they can change. When I looked at it, it was like they can change your website. I don't know. It was just a long list that was way over, way not secure for me.
Really? I think Karen, in general, Bitmoji has a long list. Like if you read just to sign up for the regular Bitmoji, not even through anything, it's like pound of flesh, firstborn, and you're like, sure, right?
Sure, because yeah, it's a fun cartoon. Yeah, okay.
I'm not doing it on my as a Chrome extension.
Yeah, I was. I think I was airdropping them for my phone.
Yes, that I'll do. Oh,
that's a good idea.
Yeah.
You can see, I have no second thoughts. I drop that stuff right in there. I don't care.
Oh, really? Read what it says, Mike. I do not like the permissions I was given.
And I think they weren't always that way, but then as soon as they were merged with or Snapchat bought them, their permissions changed a lot.
No thanks. Yeah.
I'm going to put in the chat box. It's actually ways to make your animated Bitmojis.
I like that we've come to the really important part of the conversation now. This is great. And I am hanging there waiting for her to put that in there.
Please, put it in.
Sustaining interest, right? For the kids especially.
I'll just leave that open for later.
Yes, for the students. That's why we're doing this.
Oh, that's what I meant. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah. It was an engagement strategy for students. Everybody knew that.
just clarifying. Yep.
Just saying it out loud so it's in the recording.
Hey, sometimes you got to motivate and engage teachers too.
Exactly. I'm all for it.
So I was motivated by something super important. I got a text to remind me that I had a haircut appointment tomorrow. Yay!
Do you know we still can't get our hair cut in Massachusetts?
I say not here, not where I live.
We can't get our hair cut for another week. I'm desperate.
Yeah, I don't so even know you're really going to be a couple weeks or more.
Mike's
really suffering there.
I just gave myself a haircut yesterday, so I am.
See, I jumped in here last minute. I have not contributed anything serious. I am so sorry.
Kelly, we don't look for you for serious.
Okay,
we look
thank
for
you.
Sometimes we do. Sometimes
I like that. Kelly came in and then reassessed her own value to the whole conversation right now. We were fine.
No, Kelly and a bunch of people helped me out big time in trying to plan my end of the year celebration for my therapist and have it be meaningful from a virtual distance.
Nice.
So she has contributions other than just bringing the funny. So,
I agree. She was the one judging herself. No one else judged her. She judged herself.
Well, okay.
So I judged her a little. I'll be honest.
All right, well, I did too, but I did it quietly, Rachel. I didn't say it out loud.
Oh, sorry, I didn't then.
Well, I figured since I ended up doing 7 webinars this week.
Oh.
So I already feel a little crazy, so I think that's why I swooped in here and like just let it out now, and then I'll get serious later.
Isn't that the worst when you manage your own schedule and yet you get one of those weeks where you're like, well, wait a second, why am I doing so many webinars? That's not a good plan. No. I feel for you.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's Thursday, unless it's Wednesday.
I was going to say Wednesdays kind of become that day.
I think you're all about it. What? You want to see the link to sign up again? Okay.
Oh, yes, please.
There's our link to sign up. Hopefully we'll see you guys. Some of you there, some of you will be presenting, so
yeah. Thank you. Hey, Mike, I'm going to do mine on games. I don't think you had a title in there, so I sent you an email.
Oh, wonderful. Once I set up my Bitmoji scene, I'll respond to any emails. So
it'll be a while. It'll take you.
It might be a little bit.
It's a rabbit hole, let me tell you. Holy cow.
I'll be distracted for roughly 2.5 hours.
It says Bitmoji scene.
Nice. I don't even need to write it down. That's how engaged I am in that. I'm just going to do it right. I don't even need to write a note. I'll write notes for other stuff. All right, guys, it's 2 minutes before one. What else do we want to talk about? This is usually where we talk about something good that goes to like 10 after, so. What do we got? Anybody else have something they learned this week for Karen? Karen is such a good idea. It was such a good idea.
Let's say you learned things this week. You're going to be talking about them on Wednesday night.
I did learn things, but I wasn't sure whether they were going to be, they were divulgable yet.
It's on the basics are on the like less on the like telling about it. So people
I saw the invite. I was a little surprised because I wasn't 100% sure I was doing that, but I am. But yes, yeah, so Wednesday night there's going to be a Lesson Picks Live about some of the games features that have been added. So I helped kind of give some input from the OT perspective and some of the cool things that they have added to make our lives a little easier.
Wait a second. What time Wednesday night?
Five.
Okay. Maybe this could happen during AT chat. No, you want it separate. Okay.
It's smoothly in between AT New Hampshire and AT chat. So.
Yeah, that's why Wednesday is the day this week on my calendar where I'm like, oh, okay.
I know. I was thinking about that, Mike, with so many of us that are in part of AT chat participating in AT in New Hampshire. What are we going to do for Wednesday night?
I don't know. And Karen, I didn't even tell you, but I wrote your name on something.
Yeah.
Karen got voluntold.
You got voluntold. It says AT chat live.
Share out things they've learned.
Yeah. Share out what they learned. There you go. AT chat solved.
Yeah. Let's do
now
it.
Now I get back to my Bitmoji scene making.
Yeah. It's fun. But I do what. So it's interesting about the copyright issues.
With what? What?
Somebody said something about, Tiffany. They're doing great things. And many are getting worried about copyright issues about BitEDU.
Mm. Yeah, there's a whole Facebook group of people making like crazy gigantic scenes. And then I think there was some conversations in that and or around it about, copyright concerns. I think some people are just going and grabbing pictures from wherever. The same copyright issues we deal with creating any kind of material of, no, you can't just go steal a Google image from the furniture store. You have to actually, have a Google image you have permission to use.
Well, there you go. What better way to wrap up a conversation than talking about copyright infringement? That was fun. All right, it's 101. Anything else, or else I'm gonna let everybody go. Last thoughts, last calls.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Bruce.
Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Continuing to host this, it's a nice rejuvenating time.
It is fun, right? Happy to do it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good week. Hopefully, I'll see you on Wednesday.
Yep.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. Do you have an idea for a future episode? Leave an audio message via SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/ITS podcast with your suggestion. It may appear on an upcoming episode. To stay current on all things inclusive, and assistive technology, follow Mike on Twitter at MMATP and visit his website at MMATP.com for inclusive technology resources and all the previous podcast episodes.